You're listening to the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 podcast. Hosts Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall give their perspective on the hottest topics in college football. Now let's get on with the show.
And welcome back. The College Gridiron 365 podcast getting set up for the 2017-2018 college football season. My name is Brant Parsons, along with national college football writer for the Orlando Sentinel, Matt Marshall. And Matt, we had technical difficulties. We had, you know, a somewhat of an off season, but we're back. The podcast strong and ready to go for the season. And we're going to start with news, but first, just welcome back. And I know it seems early, but it's June, so I guess for us, it's time to start looking ahead to the college football season.
Well, yeah, as we record this right now, I mean, it's 6 weeks away from the SEC football media days in Hoover, Alabama, and that's usually the traditional kind of start, unofficial start to the to college football season. And it's amazing to think that we're this close away. I mean, 6 weeks really sounds far, but in a way, it's just right around the corner. And, you know, so much has already happened in the last couple months since the national championship game. A lot of schools, a lot of conferences have met, discussed many things, and I think that's something that will give fans kind of a little bit of a taste as they get ready for the off season and for the little bit of the summer doldrums.
We'll touch on a few of the topics. Again, this is we're recording this on Friday, June 2nd, and so there is breaking news as we're recording it coming out of the SEC. Not a shocking development, but certainly a new development with the graduate transfer rules in the SEC, lowering the penalty down to a single year to schools when they have a graduate transfer that doesn't meet the academic requirements, which locally in our state opens the door up for the Florida Gators, who were waiting out that 3 years and not able to do it because of two transfer students that didn't meet up to the academic regulations. But that means that they may have a quarterback coming into Gainesville. But this, Matt, this was something that the SEC took a pretty hardline approach when they first came up with this rule with 5 years. They lowered it to three. Nothing shocking with them going down to a year. There will be people that will look at this, probably rightfully so, and say that it's not about the academics, but in college football, sometimes it's just not about the academics. But not a shocking move from the SEC, one that we all saw coming today.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, again, let's put this aside and not try to sugarcoat this. This has never been about academics. I mean, I don't think the graduate transfer rule, you know, I think maybe when it first started out, they tried to kind of pass it off as being something where these players were going to go to these schools and get their graduate degrees, and that was going to help out. But over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, we've really seen this rule kind of just be used as a way for a player to get his degree, and then to go on to another school when he's got a little bit of eligibility left and play somewhere else, maybe to the benefit of himself or to the team. And I think this is a perfect situation. You know, Malik Zaire, who obviously feels like his time, he graduated from Notre Dame, he feels like his time really isn't the best when it comes to, you know, getting ready for, you know, the next step, which is the NFL. So I think, you know, this allows him the opportunity to go play somewhere else. Obviously, it's not official, but, you know, he's mentioned that he would like to probably, you know, go to Florida. I think he also mentioned Texas as a spot. And this is a big deal for a school like Florida. You know, you look at their quarterback situation over the last couple of years, and it's been one of the weakest positions on this team. And, you know, you got a guy like Luke Dorial who's coming off an injury. You got a guy, Felipe Franks, who hasn't thrown a collegiate pass yet in a live game. Kyle Trask is the same way. They desperately need some depth. And I think Malik Zaire could provide him that. But as I told someone the other day on the radio, you know, listen, Zaire hasn't attempted less than 100 passes so far in his career. He's only has 6 touchdowns and no interceptions. It's not like he was burning it up at Notre Dame. He was hurt. He missed a lot of the season a couple years ago. This is a guy who comes in a situation. He's kind of fresh, kind of unproven, so to speak. But I think being a left-hander and having some mobility, I think he would provide a big asset for a Gators team looking to find some sort of spark, any sort of spark, for their offense the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on Zaire to Florida just because it's not official yet. But the news of today makes it possible, as I said, because the Gators even if Zaire wanted to go to Florida, they wanted him to come there, would not have been able to pull this off under the old SEC rules. So they were waiting on this. Malik Zaire probably waiting on this to see when this was made official, as it was today. But now that the Gators are one of those options, it certainly seems like the way that things have gone lately, especially in Florida, and you and I have had countless conversations off mic and off camera on this, but they've had trouble since a guy named Tim Tebow developing a quarterback. I don't know that this is the answer long term. It would be obviously a short term fix, and I guess that's a question that the Gators need to figure out is, do you need a 1 year quarterback to come in to kind of bridge the gap until maybe Franks is ready, or are you ready to hand him the keys to the offense now?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's a good question, as you mentioned. I mean, one of the things that's bothered me the last couple of years for the Florida program is they haven't developed that quarterback position. You know, you look back when Urban Meyer was here, Dan Mullen was the, you know, quarterback coach. He was the last guy really to develop a quarterback. And since then, they've struggled. You know, Will Muschamp wasn't able to do it during his time. And Jim McElwain hasn't done it. So far, he's done it with graduate transfers, Luke Del Rio, Austin Appleby. I mean, he really hasn't taken a young man and really kind of developed him into an elite quarterback. People thought Felipe Franks could be that guy, and maybe he will be over time, but it'll be interesting to see if this happens, if Zaire decides to go to Florida, if he decides maybe to go somewhere else. Either way, I think this is a big deal, not just for Florida, but for the SEC in general. I think this opens the door for a lot of schools now to maybe add some graduate transfer players at positions maybe where they're the weakest in the offseason.
And as crazy it may sound, coming off consecutive SEC East division titles just a few years removed from a 4-8 season. But the seat is warming under Jim McElwain, and I think part of that may be because we haven't been able to see his offensive prowess develop the Gators like maybe he thought, maybe we thought that he would. And certainly if he's feeling any of that heat under a seat, that might be a reason that he would go for a graduate transfer, because maybe he doesn't feel he has 2 years to try and fix that quarterback situation. Worth watching, I think.
Sorry to bother you. I mean, I would also throw out there that if this was a regular Florida season where the Gators would start out with maybe an FCS opponent or, you know, a lower tier FBS opponent, maybe then you can bypass a guy like Zaire and stick with the Franks and try to develop him. But you remember, this is a rare year for them where they start out on the road, you know, in front of a major crowd, you know, against Michigan, a quality opponent, an opponent that's really humiliated in the last two times. This is they have to kind of start out from the gate and try to win right away. So maybe that's McElwain's thinking when it comes to adding a guy like Zaire.
It's a neutral site football game, but the first time since 1990 that the Florida Gators are playing a non-conference football game outside the state of Florida, and certainly kicking off the season, as you said, with Michigan, maybe changes some of those priorities. Matt, last summer when we were doing the podcast, and pretty much I think every time we've ever done a podcast, there was always talk about expansion. There's no talk about expansion right now, at least not at the higher level. Certainly, the smaller conferences or you know, the second tier conferences always looking and mixing and matching possibly. But the Big 12 last year, we were writing the obituary for, and now there's some cash in the Big 12. So maybe we were maybe they weren't as dire as it seemed.
Well, you know, I think, again, yeah, as you mentioned, you know, last time this year, this time we were really talking about expansion. There was a woe is me. Was the Big 12 going to explode? Were they going to add schools like UCF, you know, UConn, you know, Boise State, that sort of situation? And now you look at today, you know, the Big 12 conference commissioner, you know, Bob Bowsby, you know, says that the conference is now going to distribute a record $34.8 million to its members. That's a, you know, up about 15% from what they gave away last year. I think, again, this just shows, as much as conferences may not feel like they are as elite, let's say, as the Big Ten or the SEC, they still are making money. I mean, it may not be the kind of money that people think that they should be making in those conferences, but they're still making the kind of money that they need to do to be successful. And I think what's interesting, and when I look at this, is that I think, yes, Texas and Oklahoma will probably still grumble a little bit about this, and they're saying all the right things right now to the media about, you know, we're all in and everything's great. But, you know, at some point, I'm sure they're looking over at the SEC and with its network, and they're looking at the Big Ten with its network, and they're seeing much more money being brought in. But I think not expanding was the right move for them as well. If they had added some schools, obviously some of this money wouldn't be nearly as much, I don't think, just because I don't think the schools they were considering adding would have given them that kind of a boost. So again, the rich get richer, and it also shows that college football is still a very viable option despite the ever-changing landscape when it comes to national television.
And the Big 12 has its championship game this year too, so they win on all levels, it seems, at this point.
Yeah, they do, and that championship game will add a lot more revenue as well. They'll get a sponsorship, I'm sure. They'll have, you know, a major television network, obviously, whether it's Fox or ESPN, will broadcast the game. So they'll get their money from that as well, and that will help them too. So let's not forget, they still have the grant of rights deal, which takes them through, I think, the 2025 area. So I don't think anything's going to happen anytime soon. It's going to be probably around that time, if anything would ever change.
A topic we haven't talked about on the podcast, because this is our first podcast of the season, but it's news that's been out for a short time. And coming this Christmas season, an early signing period. It's been talked about for years. It's been bounced back and forth. But Matt, maybe explain first to anybody that may have missed what the early signing period means or how it will work. And then we can kind of discuss how we think it'll change, because I think it's significant, maybe not for how people will first perceive it, but an early signing day period now instituted for college football.
Yeah, it was, you know, this is something that's been discussed for quite a long time, actually decades, and it just got pushed through in a broad kind of changing legislation for recruiting that was pushed through. And, you know, the early signing period, you know, we normally have our national signing day. It's the first Wednesday of February, where kids sign their national letters of intent, you know, to go to decide what schools they're going to. Now, with an early signing period, which is a 3-day period set in mid-December, starting in December 20th, you know, these kids can decide to commit to a school earlier. You know, they can get their kind of out of the way, get their signing done, and they can give them a little more time to kind of focus on being a kid, you know, the last couple months, or they can get signed up and ready to go to get to school. So this will actually provide some schools a break a little bit, I think. But I think one of the things that's kind of been, you know, kind of upset some of the coaches I've spoken with over the last couple months is the fact that, you know, this falls right in the middle of December. It falls right in the middle of bowl season. And there are going to be coaches out there right now trying to get prepared for bowl games. They're going to have to send part of their staff out to start to do some last minute recruiting. I think a bigger issue with this as well is this idea that, you know, there's going to be change to the recruiting calendar, which opens the door for recruiting in the months of April, May, and June, as well as the usual recruiting months, which start out when school starts in you know, August. So you're looking at 8 to 9 months of solid recruiting time period, and a lot of coaches were upset by that as well. So two rules that went through that passed, but have really kind of upset a lot of people out there.
I think it was a rule that everybody wanted. I don't know that they wanted it on the dates that it was finally passed for. Who will benefit most from the early signing period? It's been debated a lot of different ways, but who do you think benefits most from having this period in December to kind of lock some kids up?
Well, I think the ones who benefit the most are the Group of Five schools. I think those schools which, you know, had to compete head-to-head with the Power Five schools, the SECs, the Big Tens, the ACCs, I think those Group of Five schools now will have an opportunity to kind of lock some kids up now, get them, you know, get the name to paper, and they'll have, you know, kind of the situation set up. I think some of the schools in the, you know, the bottom tier of Power Five conferences, you know, the schools, maybe not the Alabamas, not the Ohio States or the Michigans, maybe he'll get to lock some kids up and get them taken care of. I think also who it might benefit a little bit is it's some of the high school recruits, you know, some of the kids who already know their decision, already want to go ahead and sign their name to the paper. That way then they get the next, you know, 2 or 3 months to relax and not feel they have to go through the hoopla. So I think it's going to be interesting. All the coaches I spoke with are really concerned with the amount of time that's going to be spent recruiting. the time that's going to be spent at bowl practices. You know, Pitt coach Pat Narduzzi made a joke to me about how, you know, he's going to have to get his kids to go buy his wife's Christmas presents because he's not going to have any time in the month of December, you know, to go out and, you know, to do the kind of family things because he's going to be focusing on recruiting and bowl preparation. He also mentioned a very likelihood that you could see a lot of assistant coaches not attending bowl practices, in fact, being out on the road recruiting, and you could see some GAs, some graduate assistants, actually on the fields out helping out with bowl preparation because they're going to try to step in and help as much as they can. So I think this is a rule that's going to get amended. I think it will be changed. I don't necessarily know if the date will change. I think the recruiting calendar part of it definitely will change. You'll see that kind of go away. But I think at some point an early signing period is definitely needed. It'll just be interesting to see if they keep it in December or if they move it to a date like August or July where they feel like they can get it out of the way before the season starts.
I thought that, yeah, I think that was kind of the idea, of, at least from my vantage point, when this was first, or when it first, not when it first, but it more recently kind of turned to maybe having that early signing period before the season. Obviously, that would help the kids, especially ones that get hurt and then may have scholarships rescinded. But the surefire ones that were decided, do that in August, then go through the season, and then you have it in February. I don't know about having it in mid-December really makes that much of a difference, except how you said it puts a strain on the college programs and it puts a strain on the assistant coaches and that whole part of it. I personally don't know that 6 weeks prior really will makes that much of a difference to how the whole process goes down. I think an early signing period, as you said, in August really would change, I think would have huge impacts on this. This just seems, I don't know. Like I said, it does help Group of Five schools, but just the date of it, I don't know the complete benefit of doing it, but it will be a game changer. It may not change everything in the first year, but I think you'll see it as a game changer. And that was going to be my other question to you, is what will National Signing Day look like now? And will it still have that same kind of draw to it that it does now? Do you see this impacting that where so many kids will start to sign in December and not wait until February?
Well, I think it will change a little bit, but let's not forget. I think the top, 10 to 15 players in the country are always going to wait. I think they're going to wait to the very last minute because they want to get those last pitches. They want to see the coaches come to them, and they want to see what happens. And I think also one of the factors we didn't discuss was, after the regular season, that's when some schools make coaching changes. So there's a possibility you're going to see some guys get fired, move on, maybe take another job, so there's this idea that, do you sign your national letter of intent, on December 20th, and the coach that you think you're committing to either gets fired or moves on and takes another job after that, what happens? So I think it'll be interesting to see the impact that regard, and I think what will be interesting to see is, I don't necessarily think the Group of Five schools, as I mentioned, on the regular National Signing Day will have as much movement up or down. But I still think you'll see schools like Alabama's, the Michigan's, the Ohio State's, the Florida's. I still think you'll see some movement on that day. It just may not be as dramatic as it was in the past. But let's be honest, early enrollment, early enrollees, which are kind of sweeping the landscape now as well, I think when they sign early, I think that kind of takes a little of the drama away as well. I mean, this past season, Alabama was the number one team going in to the day and never really kind of changed much throughout and ended up being that way throughout. So it's been that way the last couple of years. I think it's going to be that way as we move forward with this new rule. But it'll be interesting to see what kind of changes are pushed forward, especially through the end, say, of the next 6 months or so.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you on that. I was going to say that National Signing Day seems to be watering itself down with the early enrollee, just the new trend of guys getting into school early, graduating in December so they can get an extra semester in at college, and the top guys committing quicker and earlier and locking in. And I remember, like you said, this year and a little bit of last year's National Signing Day, there wasn't the huge names. There was, there's one or two guys, but it wasn't like maybe it was 5, 6, 7 years ago where there were so many guys that waited for National Signing Day to make their announcement. All the big name guys now, they're in school by National Signing Day. They're already on campus. They're already taking classes. They're already in the weight room. They're already in the nutrition. And so maybe this is just a continuation of the watering down of what National Signing Day is. From a work standpoint, I have no problem with that. But I do agree with you that I think that change has kind of already been happening as far as what National Signing Day is. And this is just kind of a continuation of really drawing out that process, but just make it maybe a little more officially drawn out. So now kids are signing in December and not signing, you know, in their college classroom in February where they're already on campus.
Yeah, and I think this is, you know, recruiting is always going to be an issue for, you know, for college football, for college sports in general. And I think we know what recruiting's been like over the years, over the decades, you know, in college football, and it's kind of a seedy aspect of the game. And I think now you're seeing more and more coaches talk about this idea of, you know, they really want to kind of change it a little bit and kind of clean it up and not make it so that it's such a dirty situation. And I think this could help out a little bit. I just think what happened is they pushed this through, and I think thinking that this would kind of overall help the game, and now they're going to make tweaks over the next couple of years to see what can best help them out. But they got to sit back and see what happens and kind of go through the first year and figure out what's worse and what's good on it. And I think that's what we'll see over the next, you know, 8 months, 9 months or so before they make some maybe amendments to the bill.
Well, when the calendar hits June, we know college coaches probably cringe. This is the time of year where you don't want to be in the news, where any phone call after 11 o'clock at night probably gives you heart palpitations, because we don't know who will get in trouble over the summer, and we don't know if there are any big names like that. But on our front, from your vantage point, what are some of the storylines you're kind of watching over the summer as the season approaches, and the things that we can predict happening, but what are the main storylines you're looking into?
Well, I mean, we're looking at this year. I think there's going to be some big picture stuff going on. You know, things that looking at, one of the things discussed with some of the officials, is pace of play. You know, the games are, there's a concern the games are getting a little long, that fans are kind of tuning out, you know, they're not going to games themselves. You know, I think right now we're seeing athletic directors meeting over the next couple of months to try to figure out how can they keep the game interesting? How can they keep the game fresh? You know, they don't want to make overwhelming changes. You know, they want to make to the point of really, you know, kind of what the NFL is doing right now, you know, changing some of the rules. But they want to make sure that they pick up the pace a little bit. I spoke with, you know, some head of officials for the ACC who said, you know, his officials are going to be, you know, looking at maybe, you know, hurrying up, getting the ball snapped quicker, making sure that they kind of do their part to keep the game moving and not dragging out. Because I think there is a concern over the last couple of years that the games are taking a little longer. I think I read somewhere where SEC games were averaging 3 hours and 24 minutes, which, you know, doesn't seem like a lot. But, you know, when you think about the average fan, you think about what's involved. You know, they'd like to cut that down a little bit. They don't want to fall into the baseball realm where they get into a four-hour game. I think some of that has changed a little bit with the speeding up of offenses, you know, we're seeing with spreads and stuff like that. So I think that'll be something that'll be discussed. Something that was discussed a little bit this week at the SEC meetings was alcohol sales. You know, the SEC deciding they're going to continue to talk about it, no decision being made whether or not they're going to, you know, allow that to happen. Currently they don't, except for in, you know, certain suites and stuff like that. I think you're going to see a lot of schools look at that. How can you make more money? How can you generate more revenue? You know, ticket sales are kind of slumping a little bit. Attendance is kind of stagnant. You know, alcohol sales could be a huge plus for a school looking to kind of, you know, make up a little bit of revenue. You look at what UCF did last couple years, with their tiki bar kind of theme, you know, having a little area off to the side. I think you're looking at schools trying to do something similar to that. Just to have a little area where, you know, fans pay a little bit more on a ticket and pay a little bit more for drinks. The bigger question mark with that is just security. You know, making sure you have enough people on hand to make sure things don't get out of hand, because you still want the families to come to your games. You don't want little Billy's ears to be burned off by some drunk fan. So I think that's something to look at. I also think, you know, you're going to look at the fact that there's some concern with the ESPN situation. You know, I mean, obviously with them laying off over 100 people over the last month or so, and they're being concerned with the whole idea of cord cutting. I think there are a lot of conferences right now looking around, seeing what can we do to you know, how is this game going to change? You know, how are we going to, how things going to change? I think you look at conferences like Conference USA and the American, which their deals are currently going to be up in the next couple of years. They've got to figure out new ways to get a revenue stream going. And I think you're going to see some talk about Twitter, you know, showing games on Twitter. You're going to see some talk about streaming games on sites like Amazon or Hulu or Netflix. I think these conferences are going to try to find as many ways as possible to get their product to the people, you know, at home and or on their mobile devices. I think that's the big issue. And I think that's something you're really going to start seeing or hearing a lot more of over the next couple of years.
And along those lines, Bill Simmons of past ESPN fame and now HBO fame at Recode, a conference just in the past week, made a bold prediction that major sporting events could be on those streaming devices within 10 years, could be on. You could be seeing major bowl games on a Netflix. You could be seeing on a professional level, you know, playoff series on a Hulu. So I think that's something that you bring up, and it's certainly a place I think conferences can start to look, because the money may be drying up a little bit with the cable links, but Netflix has money to burn, Amazon has money to burn, Hulu has money, and they're trying to build their product up. I would not be surprised if you start seeing over the next decade some of these TV contracts split up and some of these games dished out to those entities, because that's what people will be watching on in the future. And those companies are so much bigger now than they were just 10 years ago. Just imagine if the trend continues, how big they may be in 10 years. But that's a topic that you touched on. I think it's something really interesting to watch.
Well, I think, you know, I don't think the first people to do it or the first conference to do it, I don't think is going to be a Power 5 conference. I think it's going to be a Group of 5 conference. I always believed like a CUSA or a MAC or a, you know, American is going to be the ones to kind of lead the way. And I'm not saying that would take their entire, you know, take their entire football games off, you know, TV and put them on a streaming device. I think they would still have their major games, they'd still have a deal with the ESPNs or the Foxes or the CBSs, so that some of their games would still be aired on their networks. I just think there'll be some other games that'll be put on there. Maybe they're secondary games, they're regional games that you'll find there as well. And I think something that people aren't really kind of talking about, which is a big deal, is replays. I think if they can get the games and the rights to put those games back for replays, I think that's huge then. I think that offers the opportunity then for the average fan to click on his, you know, his Netflix or his Hulu and watch, you know, the SEC championship game over again, or watch a game against a rival team over and over again, rather than having to, you know, find it somewhere else. So I think that's the next step. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, and it's really going to take someone who's got the vision to see past the idea of the standard television. You know, they have to have someone who feels that the internet is the place to go in the future, and that mobile devices are where fans are getting their content, it seems. And so we know this very well as newspaper people, Brent, obviously, that this is what, you know, the business is changing. I think the same can be said for college football as well.
And it changes so fast, who knows what'll even be happening 5, 6, 10 years from now. But at least now it's certainly the era of streaming and cord cutting is upon us. Matt, it's June. Take some time this month. Relax. Get ready for the season. And we both need to start pacing ourselves. But it's good to be back on the podcast. And we'll have more in the off season. I would plan, right?
Oh, for sure. We got all sorts of stuff going on. And let's remind the listeners that, you know, we've still got our college football countdown going on right now. If you go to OrlandoSentinel.com, you can kind of keep up with our countdown as we count down from 1:30 all the way down to number one as the season gets ready to kick off. And it's kind of our little gift to the viewers and the readers, you know, to get the chance to see a little bit of college football during those down months in June and July. So it's something that we put a lot of time in, and something I think fans will enjoy as we get closer to the season.
All right, Matt, we will continue on again later. This has been the inaugural season premiere, whatever you want to call it, for the 2017-2018 football season. College Gridiron 365 podcast. For Matt Marshall, I'm Brant Parsons. Do all the things the voice tells you to do right now, and we'll talk to you again soon.
The College Gridiron 365 podcast is produced by the Orlando Sentinel and hosted by Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall. Come back often and be sure to add the College Gridiron 365 podcast to your RSS and iTunes feeds. Follow everything college football at OrlandoSentinel.com.